Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have an individual who I think has helped thousands of kids going to college, Arjun Seth. Arjun, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Arjun is the founder of Ed Brand Consulting. And as I said, he's helped thousands of people go to colleges. So Arjun, tell me a little bit about your early career before we come
to Ed. So I grew up in Calcutta. Our parents run a family business, and it's a commodities, very traditional business. And I was mentored to pretty much join that business. And the flip side of that was all the decisions about my career were already sort of made. It was, like I said, a tough commodities business, and you had cycles. And I was really not interested. And when I was in college, I went to St. Xavier's. It was, I wouldn't want to call it just a terrible experience, but not something which was right fit for me. We had classes from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. and mostly no classes at all. But I had this itch to sort of keep learning and sort of figuring out what I could do. So even in the business, which is jute goods and commodities, I just wanted to do something new. And those were times of .com and, you know, those portals. Everyone was setting up a portal. Imagine this, like, I'd set up something called Jute Web, which is essentially tying all B2B sort of players in the industry, including the mills, the, you know, suppliers, and all kinds of ancillary services. It was very early days, and I was just out of college, or pretty much in my last year of college, 1995. I thought I'd probably just do that innovatively. So I got interested in marketing in general, you know, figuring out what can help people sort of connect with ideas.
And then 2 years later, you decided to set up Ed Brand.
Yeah, so it was a pretty interesting journey. And the Ed Brand experience wasn't really something what it is today. So it kind of pivoted like what the new startup founders talk about. It was essentially using my ability to market ideas and find partners. So the first few partners I found was a test prep company which wanted to come to, say, Calcutta and set up shop. I said, okay, fine, I can help you identify opportunities and maybe in the interim be, you know, the director for the city. And so it was a pretty interesting 3 to 4 year gig, actually, along with other things that I was doing. And I realized that CAT at that time, preparation for IIMs, was such a hot thing. Career Launcher was also in its early stages, and there were other firms which were also trying. And then we got into Calcutta, which was kind of a virgin market because IMS and other service providers were, you know, essentially just started operating. And before that, it was basically a model which required, you know, shipping of test papers and materials. So classroom experience and a comprehensive plan to coach kids to become MBA aspirants was what the mantra was. But my role was, again, you know, managing the show, hiring friends who were at IIM Bangalore who could come by in the evenings or even the weekends to teach. So that was my first sort of bite into education. But it was, again, more to do with, okay, I'm a businessman, I can do this, I can figure things out. But I quickly realized that it was a great responsibility. I think it just got to me that, you know, just by hiring people and just getting, and once you have the students in the room, you're like, okay, where's the quality? Where's the service? And your sort of name is on the line. And then very quickly, I learned to adapt and said, you know, I need to teach. I need to sort of take ownership. And so that experience was great. Gradually, I sort of got disillusioned with the whole one-to-many classroom format, because that's what I was at grown up in. I'd gone to school in Lamartine, which was classes of 40, 50 students. And also in St. Xavier's College, it was pretty much 60, 100 students. And I realized that the one-to-many model could work if you know, a professor is a rock star or a teacher is really great. But at an average level, where a student is desiring to not just learn about things, but also figure out their aspirations, you know, also share their vulnerabilities, it's just it's the conversations that really matter. And clearly, that was where I was good at. I could help students who had been, you know, say, admitted to or got their first call at, say, an IIM or an XLRI or wherever. And I just realized that was my strength. I could get people to talk, like this conversation that we are having. It was just interesting to look, reflect back and say, okay, my journey also started with conversations. So clearly that was my niche. But gradually I realized that I don't want to do that. I want to figure out what is the next big industry in education. And again, using my .com interest, I realized that maybe a media company or working with a media company which focuses on study abroad was another thing. So that was again around 99 is when I started this lookout for opportunities. I met many counselors all over India and then figured out that there's no standard process. It's still a cottage industry. It's evolving now. There's obviously an interesting way college admissions is perceived, and with so much bad press over the last two years, with all the scandals and everything, it's been it's showing the signs of an evolving industry.
So you know when we started, and then you said you pivoted. What was the gap in education that you found that you wanted to step into?
So it also evolved, really. Like I said, the college admissions industry was very sort of loosely defined. Luckily, I found mentors with my traveling, and with the second thing which I didn't tell you about was the magazine that I worked with.
Okay.
It's called Ready to Go.
Okay.
It was a startup. It was a print medium magazine. And what that meant was we would, again, get universities, even travel firms and any ancillary service providers onto the portal, and also get content from counselors and other educators. So that got me traveling and meeting people. Okay. Luckily, I found two mentors, and these people were fantastic. They just they did this in the US where they would mentor students one-to-one at home. So it was like a concierge service at a drawing room of a family, you know, and then engage with the student and encourage them and guide them to take ownership of their goals. And I felt that there was that part which was linking with my idea of having meaningful conversations, which lead to actionable feedback to students, and then figuring out if their skill and will levels match and if they can be pushed to do certain, achieve certain goals, let's just say. So that's the gap I found. I found education lacked that one-to-one connect.
Wonderful. And now, you know, a lot of students come to you because you have developed a reputation that you are the person who finds the right fit of colleges. What goes into finding the right fit?
Well, most of our clients look at the US, even today with all the Trump bashing and everything else, it's still around 95% of our clients identify with the opportunities of sending their kids to the US. So it's a very different thing compared to a general way to look at an IIT prep or domestic universities. So I'm going to qualify what I'm trying to say. Of course, many families start with the rankings. There are several rankings, and each ranking has its own way to look at things. So for US News or a Fortune or a Forbes or a Newsweek. And we've seen that it's a good start point. We don't discourage families to look at rankings. But after a point, they realize that once we know their child well, there are so many things. Size of the institution in terms of, like, a
city, location.
Yeah. But even some of the not so obvious things, like, you know, what is the personality of the student body? What does it mean to live in an environment which would have a certain type of political leaning, where people in that town have certain identifications with. So these things I learned along the way by traveling again. So I visited close to 240 odd colleges in the US and Canada and UK and other places in the last two decades almost. And it gave me a fairly good insight. If I was to do this without having traveled and visited colleges, it would be a very different service and probably a disservice. So just learning how to understand the student, connecting with the aspirations of the family, and then using some of our past data, knowledge, travel blogs that I write on college visits are useful. But of course, personas of our past students and what they say about their experiences is the most valuable piece.
Very interesting. So, you know, you did mention that students from India still prefer to go to the US. But I also find a lot of students going to the UK and now Australia. How does a student, other than, of course, influence from parents, take a decision on which place to go to?
It's a tough one. I think choices are many. And there's, like I said, the political, social environments keep changing. By and large, once the match and the fit parameters are established, like we size up the preferences of a student or a family, once that is clear and that's communicated well, it's easy to then filter and identify it agnostic to country, but figuring out what works, whether it's a large school or a small school or, you know, certain type of majors or strengths that this institution has to offer, linkages with industry and possibilities of, you know, future career. So each family looks at it a bit differently, but of course ROI does come in the picture.
Absolutely.
And many families
are expensive,
of course. Yes.
Okay. Very interesting. So tell me, you know, this is going to be more of a theoretical question for you. You know, when so many people from the IITs went off in the 80s, you know, there was a term called brain drain.
Right.
That's happening even today, but from the undergrad level.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on brain drain? Some of the best students are going away.
Right, right. And like, it's a good point that you mentioned that maybe in the 70s, 80s, there was that thing of, you know, the term brain drain evolving.
Yeah.
But again, qualifying, given the set of people I work with, it's different. It's about mobility, young people, and having opportunities across the globe where they are not constrained in terms of appreciating diversity in opinion, thoughts, and such that. So I think it's most families would not look at brain drain, even if they think that's the term they would want to use, as a negative anymore, given being globally minded is an aspiration many people in the 40s today would have for their kids, that, you know, we couldn't do it and we wish our students have that.
No, I'm in full agreement with you. Both my sons are outside India for the last 17 years. And I also believe that today's millennials are truly global citizens if they have the opportunity. They can go and live in any city. They're as comfortable in any country as they are in India. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. So let's move on. And this is you know, again, related to stress in students.
It's a big, big one.
How can students handle their stress when their grades are lower than expected?
Yeah, I think acceptance is very hard, especially when you fail. You find excuses, you find reasons which are extraneous. Blame parents, blame anyone. But at the end of the day, it's understanding what your skill level is for, say, a particular subject or a topic, and whether you have the will, even if you have the skill, to sort of take ownership and do something about it. The will part could also include, do I have a will to find a mentor?
Correct.
And I think plugging our services in helps. I think it's just interesting that parents sign up for an opportunity for their kids to be mentored to apply to colleges and finally go abroad to study in a right fit school. But some of the intangibles of our services, the connect with the student, and these conversations might lead to they accepting consequences of their actions. But at the same time, you know, it's not fair to generalize and say that every student should be an A star student. And who are we to sort of judge as well as sort of nudge them to become that person they cannot be or don't wish to be. And I feel that again is an opportunity to mentor families as a piece. Again, I have no background in behavioral or marriage and family therapy, but very often in our years of work, we've seen that initially when parents used to say, "You've saved our marriage." I said, "What? What are you talking about?" But it's now when I have a son, he's 16 and he's going to college, and I feel the same tension at home, I can say, okay, maybe they were not lying. They were actually genuinely sort of...
The standard refrain probably is, you don't do enough for your son.
Right.
A lot of parents will be coming being told by
it. Right.
I'm with you. So let me ask you another question.
But just to continue think the other aspect of really figuring out what the student's lacking when they say we've not made an effort or not accepting that their actions were sort of not in sync with what was required is to have those conversations about, you know, how can you become more confident? How can you become more curious? How can you creatively present your ideas?
Okay.
And how can you be calm in this whole journey of being a student in this very competitive type of setting, which most of our clients and the kids are in. And that really helps. If you can sort of talk about three pillars of a stool, and a friend of mine who's a psychologist, he wrote this wonderful book, and he talked about calm, confidence, and focus. And I use that as a, in every meeting when I see a student who's really flustered or not happy with what happened with their grades or anything else, just addressing the problem and telling them that think about it as a stool with three pillars, and if one pillar is sort of short, you will fall. And then so grab yourself, be grounded, and let's talk about it then.
Wonderful. So moving on, I'm going to quote a phrase that I picked up from what you had written to me. I said, you know, you have designed, and I quote, transdisciplinary program centered on urbanism, social entrepreneurship, and ecological stewardship.
Right.
Help me understand.
Very big names and, you know, a lot of sort of words thrown around. But I think the need for this came along when I think our students really didn't know much. So the map of their city was so limited. Students, say, in a Delhi or a Gurgaon wouldn't have a life beyond school, maybe athletic club environment, and maybe the few friends they would know or a few marketplaces and movie theaters that they would visit. And it was shocking because they would eventually be future representatives of India if they are aspiring to go abroad. And to understand local issues, to find the interconnection between city dwellers was something that I enjoyed doing. I loved traveling, going for walks in other parts of the city. And when I moved to Delhi, almost again 2 decades back, I realized that the best way to do it was to venture out and meet people. And if students don't do it, it's something that they would miss out on in representing themselves. So urbanism as an idea is about placemaking. How do you take a block which is unused, which say a DLF or whatever has just left it abandoned for future sort of prospects, and get life back into it. I'm not giving an example for Shaheen Bagh, but that again is placemaking. So our students were introduced to these ideas through the conversations that I would have, and then we would go for walks to such locations. Could be a scavenger hunt in Chandni Chowk and have questions and work as a team to do something, and then after 2 hours of walking and sampling parathas or whatever, we would then sit back and reflect. And it was interesting to see how students would never say poets, would actually present their ideas in a poem. How creativity was sort of enhanced, or even their discussions, which were kind of modeled around large, big questions about life, love, justice, and all that. The conversations we would have after those sessions was leading. And hence led them to think of ways they could contribute to ideas of ecological stewardship, which essentially means we think that we can take care of the ecology, but it's not true. It's the other way around. And just understanding that the fact that the world will go on, humans might not. And very so these ideas, conversations, and even books or suggested documentaries was what the idea was to sort of.
So, you know, my next question to you is, you know, on the admission process in India, most of the institutes in the US, colleges follow CAT or GMAT or something.
Right.
What prevents us from having something standard in India?
Well, there are changes already. Okay. There are several exams, even College Board, which is the organization which does the SAT, has tied up with several universities, including Ashoka and others, which accept SAT scores. But yes, it's not like a standard test, which is an agency which is doing it.
But do you think there is a possibility or a potential for doing something like this?
So there's this whole anti-standardized test wave, which is picking up momentum for over many years.
All over the world?
All over the world, particularly in the US, because that's where it's still prevalent. Which what that really means is many colleges are going SAT optional. What that affects a student is that if you have good grades and if you don't test well, you can still do it. So yes, Indian institutions might adopt this, but again, at the same time, rigor, academic grades cannot be replaced. If you have students have that, and transcripts are from institutions or high schools which are doing a good job, colleges accept that over test scores.
Because I've often seen how stressful it is to get admission to Delhi colleges. And students who studied in Delhi say that people come from other states and their marks are much higher, and that's the only only standard for admission.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I often wonder, my kids are much older, I'm not going back to college, but I often wonder when I see the stress these little young kids go through,
mm-hmm.
whether there is a possibility to have something standard,
sure.
which goes beyond your class 12 marks.
It's definitely, I think reasoning tests have merit and worth developing.
Mm.
But in India, of course, higher education in general is in a flux and it's evolving.
Okay.
There are only very few institutions which are taking the lead or trying something new. Till such time, we have a larger sort of acceptance of an holistic review process for college admissions. I don't see it as a blanket rule applying to all the institutions that we have, like a Delhi University or Mumbai.
Very interesting. So, Arjun, a few questions for you personally.
Sure.
You know, and these questions I ask on all my guests. My first question to you is that, you know, you came from a business family.
Right.
You know, green commodities, you built a website, you worked for a magazine, and now you built a very successful educational brand. Have you had any people who had a strong influence in your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Yeah, I mean, I think right from pretty much, I mean, everyone talks about family, but just the value of working hard, I saw that in the family, and my dad in particular. He's 75 and he's still running his business and he's just not quitting. He just doesn't understand what quitting is. And I think that's something I also kind of resonate with. And my team is like, okay, what's wrong with you? You shouldn't be working so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one. But things that I eventually realized that, which I also took from him, were perhaps holding me back to lead. And that's something you learn the hard way, where you want to build a team and you carry a set of principles saying hard work or nothing. And it's not the way teams are built. And gradually, from the mentors I've had in my life, a few of them individuals, early mentors in the college admissions business, it was more about relationships. And I think that's typically, and it's more about service as well. I think to be a leader of an organization, the word leader doesn't really mean anything. And I'm sure you know more about this, but learning to accept that you're serving people, and especially the people you work with first every day, is what you wake up with. And not saying that, okay, I have to get this done with someone. So I think, and of course, there are so many other influences, including your podcast.
Thank you. So tell me, you know, what would be three words that define Arjun?
That's a good one. Well, say some of my team members would say, sadly, still a workaholic. My wife would say is creative, always kind of thinking of ideas to do things. What my son would say, crazy. I mean, he would say that, you know, I need to calm down because he's my counselor in effect.
Wonderful. So my next question, I have time for two more questions.
Yeah.
My next question to you is, you know, on failure.
Mm-hmm.
And you of all, with so many students, must be seeing a lot of failure.
Right.
And Indian parents don't teach children it's okay to fail.
Right.
Though I think it's beginning to change, but by and large, we don't. My question to you is, what have been your learnings from some of your mistakes or your failures?
So, several, I think. One is induced stress. Like, I think the point that you made about, you know, working with so many parents, when I work with, say, 150 families a year, that means 300 plus another 150, so 450 individuals. And then suddenly an aunt or uncle does pop up as well in certain cases, or a sibling.
Mm.
So those are many relationships to manage. Doing it alone was impossible, of course. I mean, initially when I reached a peak of, say, 30 students, I said, you know, this is going to kill me. And that's when I started building a team. So initial failures were to take on that stress and say, okay, you know, I'm totally getting induced into this. I'm losing sleep and there's so much happening, and I need to make sure that my kids do well and the parents remain sane. So that was one, and that would have effect on my health, my ability to work with my team, and so on and so forth. But I learned quickly, and also some the hard way again, issues with some basic issues in health, and then I sort of reset. Then finally, I think another failure was to, again, mostly to do with understanding what makes people tick at work, and how do we create a good environment. And that's been kind of talked about earlier. There are many more, but we can go on.
So I'm time for my last question.
Yeah, sure.
Last question is, since I've got
right.
an institution sitting with me, I'm going to take some free advice from you. You know, there are thousands of people who listen to us and view us.
Yeah.
What would your advice be to a young student in class 11 preparing for college admission on what next?
Right, I think look at it as a journey and not as a, you know, kind of a straight line to success. And it doesn't matter which college you go to, it's what you do at a college that's really important. So we are sort of consciously not an agency that promotes Ivy League or nothing. Right Fit is something we believe in, but also we want to make sure that the students enjoy the process, not just to have fun and do chit chat with us, but genuinely connect with our team of mentors. Each conversation has a meaning, so it's not just fun. And there is an actionable feedback students have to work on. And if they look at this as an opportunity to take ownership and use mentors or rather work with mentors, so their ability to learn new things gets enhanced, and they can also then build on what we call 21st century skills of collaboration, compassion and empathy, creatively presenting your ideas. So our focus has moved away from just the college admissions piece to supplementing education that the students get at school or at home and seeing what could be personalized for them. And if they appreciate that, they are the kind of students. So if a student walks in and the first meeting and we haven't signed up yet, I'm not trying to figure out whether the student is going to help us get more students because that kid is going to get into an Ivy League, but it's more to do with, is that spark there? Is that connection of a mentor-mentee relationship possible? And if that's there, and you can really then hone in into or zone in into the idea of being helpful and be of service to the student and the family.
Okay, wonderful. So Arjun, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank
you. I think you're doing an amazing amount of great work for so many kids who are going all over the world.
You're kind.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.